My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the duck feed show about Better Call Saul at the moment.
Yeah. And this week, we have a very fun episode. We're talking about Cobbler. This was written by Jennifer Hutcheson, directed by Terry McDonough, and it originally aired on February the 22nd of 2016.
Yeah, we're having Jimmy trying to get settled in at Davis and Maine, and Chuck remembering he's a villain.
Yeah.
Chuck is like, not on my watch, motherfucker.
For the first episode, Chuckless. I repeat, yeah. Chuckless.
Yeah. Glad Chuck is back here. The bigger plot, again, when we're talking about the first half of the season being so Mike-centric, this is the part you remember where that storyline kind of intersects with Jimmy.
Yes.
Baseball cards. My baseball cards. No. My baseball cards.
God. Mark's little tantrums.
Yeah. Yep. So we're going to find out what happened with that, with Nacho.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill comes due, because you shouldn't talk to the police. You forfeit the protection of law, when you become a criminal. And he does not understand that.
Jimmy said it in the first season.
Yeah. We're introduced to Nacho's father here. Again, as he is, soft onboarded here, his dad, Manuel, who runs, an auto upholstery shop, played by Juan Carlos Cantu. I love this character. I love this performance.
It's one of the, it's almost comically pure.
Oh, he's a saint. He's a saint.
Character. Yeah. He's a saint. Like, it's funny how people in the show, you know, you're dealing with gray morality and everything. And then you end up with just sweetly naive people who are just perfect angels.
Yep.
Manuel is a perfect angel.
Yes.
That thing. So again, there's a little bit of fun production detail, but it's going to happen in the episode. You know, there's not a whole lot of background here. So we're going to get into it.
Yeah. Going from being Chuckless to starting with Chuck, we see him sitting down at his piano, and taking out some sheet music for, Sicilian. And we get a kind of close up. This lingers on it. The name Rebecca Boy, is written on it in, kind of feminine handwriting. I don't think we know the name of his ex-wife, but this belonged to his ex-wife.
Yeah. We don't even know that he was married. Yeah. At this point, they haven't revealed that. He keeps fucking up. This is an episode that's big for blunt visual metaphors. You know, he gets a little bit into it and he keeps messing up. He can't do it. There's something blocked up. You know, if you want to be English major on this, this is, he knows he did something bad.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, like, he's going to have his EMS is going to flare up when he is upset about Jimmy, but there's part of him that is not over this.
Right.
You know, he's about to start again and Howard comes in. He's got the morning deliveries.
Yeah.
You know, and he says, you know, he delivers everything. No pressure, but we miss you. You know, you came in before. And Chuck goes, I'm actually thinking about coming in for a couple hours next week.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of at a loss for a purpose. His purpose is stymieing Jimmy. Jimmy is for the law. He has no purpose.
I don't, does he know that Jimmy has quit the law?
No, I mean, he knows Jimmy left.
Yeah.
Okay. I think he probably, you know, knows about that. Yeah. I don't think he knows he quit the law specifically.
Yeah. Jimmy's in the wind.
He doesn't think Jimmy's working in law because this is going to be news that he's working at Davis and Maine.
Yeah. Chuck asks if anybody's heard of him.
Yeah.
Howard breaks the news like, actually, he got a job at Davis and Maine. Working as what?
Yeah, I love working as what. And I love Howard does a really good performance. Fabian, in this the scene, him being kind of assuming that Chuck will, you know, surely you're at least happy for this.
Yeah.
You know, I understand you stymied us from hiring him, but he's your brother. You should want him to be successful. Like, he's kind of like, you know, kind of proud of Jimmy.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like Howard is a little bit.
He's also soft breaking the news. Really?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he just feigns uncertainty about a few things, like trying to cushion Chuck. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He says, you know, Jimmy's name just kept coming up with the clients, you know, and Cliff said he wanted a certain continuity with the case.
Yeah.
And he's, Jimmy does have a way with people. Like, people do like him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, we all agree with that.
Can't take that away from him. And Chuck asks, like, do they know about him? Do they know his education? You know, the obvious, you know, disqualifier in his mind, you know, the go land crabs, right?
Yeah.
And Howard says, I painted a clear picture, warts and all, but I didn't stand in the way. He repeats that a couple of times, that I didn't stand in the way, almost as if, like, he's trying to say to Chuck, like, yeah, you don't have power over this. Like, you couldn't order me to stop that.
Yeah. This is what I wanted in the first place. I like Charlie Hustle.
Yeah.
You know, he says, you know, and Chuck just tries kind of graciously, says, nor should you stand in the way. You know, they're all upholding the masquerade here. He's going, is it partner track? Like, he can't let it go. And he goes, Howard says, I imagine so. And Chuck hates this.
Yeah.
He cannot handle it. So Howard leaves. Chuck sits down at the piano watching the metronome go. Like, yeah. I've got to stop my brother.
Mm-hmm. No music, just ticking. And his own scheming. Mm-hmm. Cut over to the HHM conference room. This is very cute. Kim is setting out everything for a meeting. And she switches the legal pads around so that she and Jimmy are sitting next to each other. Yeah. And like during the meeting, she's playing footsie with them.
If you like Danishes and you don't get to eat them because of any kind of endocrine disorder you have, this is a really rough scene for uneaten Danishes.
Yeah.
You see a whole plate of Danishes that nobody touches.
Mm-hmm. Just laying good. There. Like they're the good Danishes too. They're not the cream cheese one. They've got the jam in them.
They look good. They look real good.
They really do. I thought you were going to say, if you like feet, boy, you're eating good.
I mean, there's a little bit of feet in this.
There's a little bit of feet.
You know, can I do a sidebar real quick on foot fetishism shit?
Sure.
I'm not calling you out for this specifically.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of foot fetishist, you can't show a foot without it being like kind of lascivious.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and like feet exist.
Mm-hmm.
They exist in a non-sexual realm as well. Like if you have a foot, I'm not calling you out for this. Everyone if they show a foot in something, people are like, oh man, oh yeah, foot freaks are seeing it. And sometimes it's just a foot. Like we have fucking feet.
Yep.
We all got them. Footsie existed before foot fetishists, you know, took the world by storm before World War III, before they won, you know?
I was only bringing it up because of Bob Odenkirk. Like, people discovered on Twitter that he was following, like, a bunch of, you know, just, like, pictures of ladies' feet accounts. And they brought it up. They kind of bullied him into unfollowing, which is like, well, fuck that. He should get to follow who he wants.
It's fine.
He's not following Nazis. He's not like retweeting Nick Fuentes. Come on, bros. Yeah.
It's pretty harmless. It's firmly in the I don't get it, but it doesn't bother me on any level.
Yeah.
Like if somebody's going to be a foot person.
It comes with bad behaviors. People badgering, you know, people that post foot. But like that's anything. People get badgered for that.
When in the wake of this episode, I was reminded of that. And me and Liv rewatched the episode of King of the Hill where Peggy's the foot model. That episode is great. Put him next to some garbage, put him
next to some flowers. They're selling the flies, Hank.
They're selling the flies. So good. And the when they're looking at the website, just that audio clip for going, oh yeah
with the ping pong paddle
losing it.
No, I was specifically bringing up the feet thing because of the Bob Odenkirk story. Let him live.
It doesn't matter. No. They get through this really boring meeting. Later in the garage, they're sharing a cigarette. And, you know, she's asking, they're making small talk. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it like living in Santa Fe? I mean, he's in the short-term housing. Kim's just really proud of you, you know? And Jimmy says, you know, think about getting a place. And he very subtly starts talking about we.
Yes.
This is a really nice bit of subtle how they talk about their relationship. He starts off talking about I. And then he just starts, it just switches mid-conversation. We're going to need this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
She's saying the thing she wants. This is very romantic, like planning out a house.
Yeah.
Planning out a future. Like, but they can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they can't actually be open about it. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it can't just be like, hey, we want to live together. Like, it needs to be this kind of, you know, fantasy, right? Or you're going to have acreage. You're going to want horses. right? Like, oh, yeah, man, it's going to be great. You know, and Jimmy's like, aren't they very expensive, you know, with the oats?
Yeah, they love oats. Yeah. You know, and she's like, oh, it'd be great. You'll ride a horse, then come back and drink red wine. Like, they're fantasizing about lives.
Yeah.
You know, getting a smoker and barbecuing.
Yeah. And he looks at her smoking. He says, yeah, I definitely need to get a smoker.
Yeah.
Which is fun. They're doing this like little flirting. It's very cute.
Yeah. Before Jimmy leaves, Kim has a congratulations gift, and it's a thermos, a world's best lawyer thermos, but with nail polish that is written world's second best lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they have this banter relationship.
Yeah.
There.
Yep. Just keeping it real.
Yeah. Back at the nail salon, all the girls watch as the Suzuki Esteem gets hauled away and the new car is delivered.
Yes.
Mrs. Nguyen is mad about this. All the girls going out to watch.
Yep. It's disruptive.
Yep. This Mercedes Benz he gets. Jimmy says, can we get a goodbye hug? And she says, no, until we meet again. And again, being the TV show for blunt visual metaphors, like I didn't need this right after the on-off switch thing.
Yeah.
This kind of drives me nuts. Jimmy gets in the car and the thermos doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his old life is, this life doesn't fit. We know. Mm-hmm. We fucking know.
Yep.
It is very blunt.
Yeah. Could be a little bit more artful.
Yeah. Or just do it fewer times.
Mm-hmm.
Like we just had a lot of versions of this. Yeah. He says must be metric. That's also weird. I feel like a standard cup will fit most standard cup holders.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they probably would have to make a custom cup holder or a custom cup.
You run into that though.
With like the mega gulps and shit, but like just a tumbler like that.
I don't know. They make those things for cars. I have had a tumbler that hasn't fit. I've had a water bottle that hasn't fit. That looks like it is going to, but doesn't.
I have my water bottle doesn't fit in our car, but it's a big water bottle. It's not like a commute coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we come over to Mike sitting in the parking booth. And this is one of the funniest scenes in the show. It's like the T-Rex is coming in Jurassic Park. You hear a rumble and his coffee is rippling. And Mike's expression is very funny. The Jonathan Banks acting in this.
Daniel pulls up in his Hummer and he can't reach the ticket machine. Mm-hmm. He's up too high.
And I love when Mike looks at him, Daniel sees Mike and goes, hey.
I know hey, him. Oh, hey. Yeah. What are you doing here?
I work here. And Mike says, why don't we pull around? Mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk. Daniel says, I got robbed, my baseball cards. You know, he's like, oh, they took the drugs. He's like, yeah, but more importantly, my cards. Mm-hmm. I only really care about the baseball cards. And Mike is in disbelief of this. Like, your baseball cards.
Like, repeating it back just to make sure that it's real. That he didn't just hear the dumbest shit imaginable.
Yes. Mike says, I shouldn't have to tell you. I shouldn't be surprised I have to tell you this.
Yeah.
But it's a very bad idea for you to voluntarily talk to the police.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not here as a criminal. I'm here as a victim. He's, you know, he bristled at being called a criminal before for stealing, and selling stuff he shouldn't have been selling. But here he thinks he can separate it, right?
Yep.
He is not made for the game.
Yeah. He's forfeited. Yeah. Forfeited the protection of the law. He says, if you've already talked to the cops, what are you doing here? He says, oh, they just wanted to add a couple questions. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very dedicated to finding this thief. Sweet, naive idiot. And Mike is a cop. He knows what this is. You know, this is a fishing expedition. They're going to break you. There is a nice parallel between how the cops talk to Price, specifically in the house, and what Jimmy and Kim do to Ken.
Yep.
They are both scamming of a sort.
Mm-hmm.
They both have hidden motives and they are taking advantage of somebody who is dishonest, who is in the wrong for this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And who can't stop saying incriminating shit.
Yes. Stop incriminating yourself.
Yes.
The guilty underlined three times. It's a fishing expedition. They're going to press you and you will break because you're you. Like, I have no faith in you.
Turn around, call them, leave. And he's like, but I have an appointment.
Break it. You know, the baseball cards are the cost of doing business. And Daniel throws a tantrum. No. Mm-hmm. You know, can't do that. Some of those cards are my dad's. I need them.
Yeah. He talks about having some cards that are worth like millions of dollars.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts. So Mike is at a loss. You know, he's like, listen, I'll just do it. I'll find your cards.
Mm-hmm.
At this point. And Price thinks this is generous. You know, that's something you do. That's very generous. You know, it'll cost you. He's not generous at all.
Boy, does it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So Jimmy's working on sandpaper, signed Piper paperwork, and here's somebody playing guitar. This is also a very, like, this kind of office place.
Yeah.
Here. And Cliff, the boss, with his door open, is playing guitar.
Yeah. We have two Spinal Tap alums playing playing instruments here. Although, no. To be accurate, he should be playing drums.
And exploding.
Monstrous to be playing a guitar in an open in an office with an open door, and you're the boss.
Yeah, an open office as well. Like, there's no, yeah. You know, Jimmy's in an office, but most of it's just the floor.
I've worked in places that somebody, in a place where somebody did that, and I fucking hated it so goddamn much, Gary.
It's pretty nuts. Like, yeah. it is a weird thing to do. You know, close your door. Mm-hmm. So he comes in. You know, Jimmy says, "Hey, you know, pretty good." He's like, "Well, I just do this to clear my mind. I hope you have something that you can decompress." You know, mm-hmm. He goes, "Yeah, you know, I found something. Yeah. You know, this discrepancy, this thing we might be able to pursue. Like, yeah. This is to just tell us that we are. He's doing good work."
Yes.
You know, he's capable of doing this law work that he's going to decide he doesn't want to do.
He found an angle, right? Yeah. Like, oh, they were compelled to sign this.
Yep. Yeah. Mike goes to this upholstery shop, and this turns out this is where Nacho's dad works and where Nacho works. Mm-hmm. Comes, it's very charming there. Manuel, the father, says, you know, you should spend your money on a new car. You know, and he keeps kind of explaining it through Nacho, through translating. It has sentimental value.
Yes.
You know, this is an excuse just to get here and talk to Nacho.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's, you know, he's putting on the face. He is trying to extend this out so he can get left alone with Nacho. Right.
Yeah.
You know, so like, yeah, I'm thinking about getting alligator skin seats, you know, something nice. Yeah. And he's like, no, you need to get something cheaper. Right.
Yeah. That'll match it.
Yeah.
You know, something that fits.
Again, he is a fucking angel. He is talking Mike out of giving him more money. He could probably do a ton of markup on Crocodile. Yeah.
Yeah. When he gets called back, he says, finish up with him and don't try to upsell him.
Yeah.
Fucking unreal. It doesn't exist. And Nacho is here with Mike. And I love this scene of them both dropping the masquerade immediately.
Uh-huh.
Really nice. Yeah. You know, Nacho says, how'd you find me? And Mike just going, you know, like.
Come on. You're not as careful as you think you are, bud.
Yeah.
Nobody's says, careful, you know, enough for Mike. Yeah.
Here's what happened. You know, you saw that, you know, that big, horrible car and figured, hey, this guy's an easy mark, you know, and you saw the cards and figured it was some bonus. I don't blame you. But you underestimated how big of an idiot you were dealing with.
Yeah.
Here, because not only, you know, he lost the cards and he's involved with the police.
Yeah. And Nacho says, oh, that's a you problem. You know, you were working with him. And Mike says, no, that is an us problem. He says, what I think we have here is a carrot and stick situation. And Nacho, very reasonably, you know, here's this heavy who is coming and, you know, talking to his dad, showing, I know where you work, at the very least. He thinks that Mike is threatening his family. Nacho is very protective of his dad.
Yeah. And he goes, no, you know, I'm not here to threaten your family. The stick is Tuco Salamanca.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the police involvement raises the risk that Tuco is going to find out about it. And if you don't do this, I will also just tell Tuco about it.
Yeah.
The carrot is the baseball cards.
Yeah. Remember, Tuco does not know that Nacho is doing this stuff on the side, know, not going through him and his organization, right?
That's why Mike knew there would not be trouble the first time. They wouldn't get ripped off. He says, you return the baseball cards, you give me $10,000 in cash, and you're going to net about $60,000. You know, I prefer the carrot. Nacho says, how did that work? We don't find out. You know, we cut over to Daniel handing the keys over to Nacho.
Yeah.
You know, talking about how, you know, she needs premium, dude. Premium.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, and Nacho says, yeah, I'll tell that to the guys down at the chop shop. And Daniel just goes, why?
Yeah. Like, don't you think this is cool? Don't you want this?
Uh-huh.
He's like, I wouldn't be caught dead driving this. It looks like a school bus for 60-year-old pimps. Very funny.
Yeah. All of this being dismantled. Daniel's little living the high life here because, you know, the cards are worth more to him, both literally and also, you know, emotionally. He goes through, he checks the boxes to make sure all the high value ones are there. And, you know, Nacho gets right up in Daniel's face and says, I assume our business is concluded. And then they drive off. Like, no, this is too much. You're dumb. I don't want to buy drugs from you anymore.
Yeah. Daniel says, you know, I can't help but think an apology is in order. He stole my stuff.
Yeah.
Mike does not dignify this response, but he gets a call from the police. His ringtone is "Take Me Out to the Ball Game." He enjoys baseball.
Yes. Yeah. So cut back to Jimmy. They're in a meeting between HHM and Davis and Maine to talk about you know, movement on the Sandpiper case. And then, oops, storms are coming. A secretary comes in and starts gathering up everybody's cell phones.
Yeah, I love this scene. Like everyone just kind of understanding this and Jimmy's dread at this. He starts stumbling over his words. You know, Chuck's coming in.
Yeah.
Kim puts her hand on his leg to kind of comfort him.
Oh, Chuck comes in.
Don't mind me. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's observing.
Yeah, I'm just here observing. He comes in, and this is when Jimmy falters. You know, say the end of like, I just can't do it. But Kim gives him hand like strength.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he finishes his point. You know, everyone likes it. You know, he kind of gets his strength. But Chucky was just staring at him the whole time. After the meeting, Chuck calls him over. You know, he said, "What are you doing here? You know, my name is on the building. No, what are you doing here?" Here. And he, the smuggest motherfucker in the world, he's, "I'm just here to bear witness." You know, like he's here literally just to watch Jimmy fuck up and try to psych him out and stop him, to stymie him.
He's reasserting himself in this. Like, you're still working with my firm, and I still very much disapprove.
The law is my domain.
Yes.
Writ large. It doesn't matter who you're working with. I can't have you in the law. The law is mine.
Yes.
Jimmy's phone goes off. And Mike asks Jimmy if he's still morally flexible. And he goes, "When and where?" Because Chuck just came up. Again, this push me, pull me thing is going to keep happening for a long time.
Yeah. You know, he had a Chuck attack. And, you know, he's got to go and do some scams and flams. And we get one of the most memorable scenes in the series.
Yeah. Very funny. You know, Daniel goes into the interrogation room. You know, the cops called. They were not going to give it up here. And Jimmy's there. They've met now.
Yes.
You know, cops say, "We're all friends here. You don't even really need a lawyer. We're keeping it friendly." And he goes, "Well, look at us, four friends."
Four friends, amigos.
I love it. And the cops are playing Daniel. You know, they're trying to get on his good side. They're softening him up. Hey, you know, my dad had a Thai cop card. You know, he's like, "Oh, you got to tell him to protect that from artificial lighting." You know?
Yeah.
And one of the things that Price is good at is just saying, "Let's just refocus on the thing."
Uh-huh.
You know? In a way that I'm not, I can't do that kind of thing, but just saying, you know, I know it's fine. Ignoring what you're saying, it's fine. You know, they keep saying like, "We're going to get your cards back." And he's like, "It's no longer an issue."
Yeah.
I found them, you know, I hired a private investigator.
Yeah. You know, and they want to know, because again, this is a fishing expedition. They know that they have him on the hook. And sadly, it's none of the police's business, but you know, where were they? You know, it's fine. Like, just fine. Stop coming after me. Being a little bit too obvious about it.
Yeah. but doing what he's supposed to do, like, just don't say anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. Yeah. Jimmy sends him away and says he'll finish up with the detectives. So let's get down to brass tacks. Mm-hmm. You know, you found that little hidey hole. You know, we all have our secrets, but all secrets are not crimes. You know, some of them are just very private. And they say private like a drug dealer, you know, this thing that they correctly guessed. He goes, no, it's a sensitive and delicate subject.
Yes. You know? And they say, "We're going to need more to work with here." No, they don't.
they don't buy it.
No.
You
know? He says like, "Hey, so this is a dispute between Daniel and his art patron." And, you know, he's trying to be vague here. He's giving them lots of places to stop.
Yes.
And, you know, kind of hinting at what this would be and hoping that they're going to take the hint. You know, saying, "Art patron, like what? Like painting?" Like, yeah, it's more like digital media. Like, okay, what kind of videos? Yeah. Everybody knows, but like, they're going to make Jimmy say it.
Yep. Jimmy's story is they had creative differences, a lover's spat. Here he took the videos and baseball cards as you know, to make a point.
Yes.
You know, Daniel's not going to be pressing charges. There's nothing here.
That's all resolved.
The arm cap's like, "I need to know what's on the videos." You know, are there videos intended to titillate the senses? You know, porn. Well, technically they'd be categorized as fetish videos. You know, my client was fully clothed at the time.
And they press even further, and it needs to be specific. And so he gives them the details, and he says, "Squat cobbler." And you know what this is. Don't make me say it.
Yeah. You're cops and you don't know what squat cobbler is? You know? Hoboken squat cobbler. That sounds like a serial killer.
Uh-huh.
Will ever catch the Hoboken squat cobbler?
Yeah, yeah. He makes shoes and he kills people in houses that they don't own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he can only be stopped by the superhero League of Hoboken.
He makes the shoes out of the people he kills.
There we go.
The tongues are actually the tongue.
Mm.
Yeah. There we go.
Bob Odenkirk starts listing off different synonyms for this that are fake. You know, the full moon pie, Boston cream splat, simple Simon the ass man, Dutch apple ass. Dutch apple ass.
Yeah. just getting more blunt.
Yeah.
It's when a man sits in some pie and then just wiggles his butt around. Saying like, oh, maybe it's like Hellman's mayonnaise. It has a different name across the Rockies.
Love that.
Yeah.
In the original draft, the fetish didn't have a name.
Yeah.
Jimmy said he sits in pies, but Bob did this, punched up and did a good job.
Bob's like, hey, their sex acts have names. There would be a name for this. Yeah. It's unclear if Jimmy came into this, if he came to the rap battle with pre-prepared rhymes, or if he, thought it up here as just a thing. This is 2002. Cake farts would have been sweeping the nation.
Yeah. Cake farts. So he says, technically what he does is the crybaby squat cobbler. It's more specialized. He's like Julianne Moore when he gets cranked up. So he pretends to be a little crying baby and squats on pie. Mm-hmm. The cops don't buy it. He's like, yeah, like I'd make this up. You're just happy you haven't seen it. The world is a rich tapestry, my friends. Trust me, you don't want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Here. It's implied that they said we do need to see it between the cut where Jimmy is leaving with Daniel. And Daniel's like, thank you. He's like, hey, no problem, friend. Listen, there's one little tiny hanging Chad. You're going to have to make a video.
Yeah.
That video is on the DVD. I have not watched it yet, but we do get to see the squat cobbler.
Yay! I'm not kidding.
Like, yeah, they made the squat cobbler video.
I love it. Of course, Mark.
I'm gonna watch it over and over in the dark.
might awaken something. I don't know. Yeah. I'm open to it. Whatever. Yeah, it
might put something to sleep.
Yeah, seems wasteful, but
I guess that is true.
Yeah,
it is real wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's going to be full commitment on this. You're not clean from this. And later on, we see Jimmy bringing home a bunch of leftover pies from what we know is a video shoot. And, he and Kim are sitting there eating their individual pies and saying, I never would have thought of that. I can't believe that they bought it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's really impressed. Jesus, can you tell a story? And Jimmy goes, well, the video clinched it. He really cried. They believe the tears. And this is a line for Kim. Mm-hmm. Like Kim is more morally flexible than a Chuck. I mean, Chuck's actually pretty morally flexible. We're going to find out, but more morally flexible than one should be as a lawyer.
Yes.
But there are degrees.
Yeah.
Kim looks down and Jimmy thinks it's just about the pie.
Yeah. It's like, oh no, these are leftovers. They've not touched a human ass. Yeah. But it's like, she puts it together like, you fabricated evidence. This puts everything in jeopardy. This story is no longer cute. And he says like, oh, that's just splitting hairs. What matters to him is the result. Like, oh, you liked how I did it.
Yeah.
Right.
And she won't let this go. This is jeopardizing your job at Davis and Maine, which jeopardizes me, mm-hmm. as somebody put my neck out for you. And he's like, this isn't even Davis and Maine. It's a pro bono thing. Just a small time thing for a friend.
Yeah, is risking disbarment that is some friend, right? Yeah. Like, why in the world would you get involved with this? How does this touch you?
Yeah. Yeah. And Jimmy says, you didn't complain about the Ken thing. Like, this is what I was talking about. You signed up for this. And this is, again, for her, is past the line. These are not the same things.
Yeah.
I love this where she says, they're never going to find out. And she goes, seriously, you sound like every dumb criminal out there. If you keep this up, they will find out. Mm-hmm. That is a thing. Again, it works until it doesn't.
Yes.
And anytime you are doing something like this, you are on a limited, you have a limited fuse. You either die first or you get caught first.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And the path of anything like this is to get more audacious, right?
Yes.
Like, unless you have the constraint necessary to operate in this business, right?
Yes. Unless you're Gus and only Gus.
Yes. And you know, she asks, like, you know, what's the point? Like why did you get, you know, she just doesn't understand. It's like, you know, at the beginning of the season premiere, you know, she's just doesn't get it. And Jimmy can't answer her. He doesn't have an answer that he can speak out loud.
Yeah. It's just a need. Yeah. I mean, the answer would be unsatisfying.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's like, a need.
I just gotta. Yeah.
Yeah. I get the itch.
Yeah.
And they do something. This is that if you didn't know they were going to break up just from watching Breaking Bad, you know it from this. She says, you know, I can't hear about this sort of thing again. And he just goes, you won't. That's relationship poison.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just take a thing and cordon it off.
No.
That's not going to work. That's going to kill your relationship.
Right. It can't be like, oh, you need to operate entirely in secret. And the way that they manage this in the future, the way that eventually it becomes, you absolutely need to tell me.
Yeah, they try to. You know, it kind of goes back and forth. And they don't, it doesn't work. This isn't going to work, though, not being told.
And then
she eventually compromises on this.
Yes.
You know, like, I need to know because I can't be blindsided by it. I'm willing to try living with this, you know, and she does for a while.
Yes. But he tells her, you won't, which is something that, you know, this being a tragedy, we know how this is going to go.
Yep. And that's the end of the episode. Good episode. Funny.
Love this episode. Yeah. Very funny. Very good mic content. You know, in the first season, we didn't get a lot of Mike being exasperated with somebody's shit.
Yeah.
You know,
mostly just Walt. And that was shit on a grand scale. It wasn't, you know, lowercase shit.
Yeah.
Like, Mike suffering fools is funny.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I love Mike. MVP of the episode, I would say. Both all the scenes with him are really good. Funny episode. Good episode.
Yes.
What can people do if they like this show?
Well, if people like the show, they can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and kick us a few bucks a month. We are weekly now, so you're getting more bang for your buck.
Yeah. We appreciate that. We also have tons of stuff you get for $5 a month, and it's important if you like the network to do that, even if you just listen to our free shows. If you're able to support us, please do. It's what we do for life, and life is getting way more expensive. We understand that, but it means your support is really important.
Yes.
You know, we need it. It keeps our houses hot. Yeah. You can also leave us ranged reviews on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, or spread the word. That's also helpful. We appreciate that as well.
And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen, who also composed our theme song.
Yeah, big thanks to Gwen. And we will see you next week. Weird to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see you next week.